Blog Talk Radio.
It's time to strap our boots on. This is the perfect day to die. Wipe the blood out of our eyes. In this life, there's no surrender. There's nothing left for us to do. Find the strength to see this through. We are the ones who will never be broken. With our final breath, we'll fight to the death. We are soldiers, we are soldiers.
Once again, for coming into Bard's Logic Political Talk, part of the growing conservative conversation, and also part of the Patriot Journalist Network. And if you are a Facebook user, it's easy to find the Patriot Journalist Network. And that is, go to the search engine and just type in as one word, Patriot Journalist Network, where you can find this show as well as Mark Prasik's Full Armor Show, which is from 8 p.m. till midnight, Monday through Friday, Eastern Time. I suggest go in there, tell Mark I said hello. I haven't had the opportunity to speak with him for a while, so it'd be much to go in and tell him Robert has said hello and hope to speak to him soon. So I'd like to thank everyone who is in the chat listening, or also those who are listening live from Bard's Logic Political Talk on Blog Talk Radio, or through listening live through the Bard's Logic Political Talk website. If there are people are listening on the show tonight in the archives, I'd like to thank you as well. Tonight we're having a different time for Bard's Logic Political Talk at 9:30. Looking at experimenting with a few different times on having a show. I apologize ahead of time for that causes any of the regulars any confusion because the show was normally has been running from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m., but now it's going to be running from it's been running from 10 p.m. to midnight, which may be the permanent time for the show, and that's Eastern time, 10 to midnight. We will just have to see how things develop. Sometimes things are in flux. I understand that. So that sometimes happens on these organic shows of Blog Talk Radio. Tonight, there is, of course, we well know, only 7 days until the general election. And the question we ask tonight and part of the discussion is, will conservatism win out? And we will have open chat and open call participation. And we'll just give a general discussion of multiple topics pertaining to the 2012 general election and conservatism. Now, one of the things we discussed last night was the electoral count. And there was an article that said that Obama was getting ready to have the 271 Electoral College, which, of course, would give him the election. However, we looked at something different, and I will share that with everyone here, is what we did is we looked at the map from www.270towin.com, and the way it plays out is different than the way that the AP poll suggested, in that it went, we went through the different, well, at least 270.com has as swing states right now, and we went through it to illustrate how not necessarily the case in that Obama was close to 271 to win. Now, what I'll do, because I think this is an important point to reiterate, is to go over those points again tonight by going over the polls. Now, they are, these polls are a collection of average polls of all the polls in a state. And so that's why I believe that gives a more realistic representation of what is really going on in the polls. And it's, should be, you know, it seems pretty unbiased as well, unlike what you would get from like a Fox News or an AP or something of that nature. And so what I'll do at this time is I will run through, as we did last night, and if folks would like to hear more of the conversation what we had last night, just check out tomorrow night's archive show. It does include this analysis, but of course it has other discussions as well. So where we will start is we will be moving from west to east, going over this map. So we will start with the state of Nevada. And right now, and this is, of course, as if the election was held today, which is 1 week from the general election. I can't believe it's already almost here for as long as I know I've been working on something at least pertaining to the 2012 election. So we are going to look at Nevada. So according to the polls, the averaging of all the polls, Nevada is going right now to Obama. Obama would take Nevada. So on the map, and if anyone would like to go to www.270towin.com and use this interactive map to move along with me, then you are more than welcome to. This answering someone to a chat here. So what I'm going to do is put the Nevada in blue for Romney. And at that point, it has Obama at 207, and I'm sorry, to Obama, Nevada to Obama, and Romney at 191. And next, moving east, we have Colorado. So I will look up Colorado here on the map if you're following with me. And that also, that actually has Romney taking Colorado. So we'll give Romney Colorado, which still Obama would be in the lead, 207 to Romney's 200. Of course, then we'll go to Iowa, which on this map is next. And it has here Iowa, scrolling down, going to Obama. So we'll make Iowa blue. And then moving to Wisconsin, which was recently was a very important state. And that is neck and neck, both at 49%. And so what I do is I look at the state on the map and I see where historically the state has gone and in the past 10 general elections. And historically, Wisconsin normally goes Democrat. So to break the tie, I will give it to the party that normally wins the state. And now we'll go to a surprise swing state, which is Michigan. Of course, we all know that Romney has family that lives in Michigan. So we will move on to there. Okay, it has Michigan also neck and neck at 47%. Okay, so once again, I go back and I move to the history. And we all well know that historically, it looks like Michigan is split 5-5 in the last 10 years. However, in the last 5 general elections, Michigan has gone Democrat, so we will give the state of Michigan to Obama, which makes the electoral count 239 to 200. Well, now we will move over. We've got to skip over Ohio because I know a lot of people want to hear about Ohio. So we'll skip over to Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania, yes, even Pennsylvania is considered a swing state. But, of course, as it normally does, have it here at Obama going for the Democrats, so we'll do that. Well, now it looks like Obama has 259 to 200, Romney. Last night's was very interesting. We'll see if any of it changes just within one day. So the next state that we will look at is Florida. Actually, let's go to North Carolina. Let's go to North Carolina. The states that normally aren't swing states. We'll look at those. So North Carolina is also neck and neck, both at 45%. So we'll look at the North Carolina and see historically, of course, except for last year, it went for Obama, but historically, North Carolina has gone red. So Obama with 259 and Romney 215 at that point. Well, then we will move on to Florida. Let's see where Florida is at. Florida is also neck and neck at 47%. So let's look at the history of Florida. And Florida has historically gone to the Republicans. So we will go ahead and move Florida over into the Romney side, which gives Romney creeping back up at 259 to 244. Obama's still in the lead, but Romney coming up. Then we will go, let's go ahead and go to New Hampshire. New Hampshire only has, I believe, the 4 Electoral College. But let's see where they have New Hampshire at. Scrolling down. Still scrolling down. Where is New Hampshire? Perhaps I missed it. New Hampshire. New Hampshire has Obama taking New Hampshire. So we'll color that blue. So right now, the state has it at 263 Obama, 244 Romney. Now to the important state of Ohio, where everyone says you cannot win an election without winning Ohio. Well, let's see. Ohio is going to Romney at this point, by 2%. So we will give Romney Ohio. That makes it, folks, 263 to 262, which brings us to a state that many folks may not have considered to be an all-important state in this election, and that is the state of Virginia. Virginia could actually hold the key to the presidency of the United States in election 2012. And right now, Virginia is going to, scrolling down, Virginia, it is neck and neck at 48%. So let's look at the history of where Virginia normally goes. I think we see where this could be going. Virginia, in the last 10 general elections, has gone Republican every time except once, in which it went for Obama in 2008. However, since historically Virginia has gone to the Republicans, I will give it to Romney. And that makes Romney actually the victor, not Obama, according to which Obama is being said to be close to 271 by the AP. And it comes out to 263 Obama, 275 Romney. However, this is what makes Virginia oh so important. And before I bring that up, I see I have Chris here on the line. I see he's been on hold for a little bit. I apologize, Chris, since I've had you on hold so long without going over the map. I'm going to talk more about the importance of Virginia in the 2012 general election. But first, I'm going to, without any further ado, open up your mic. Thank you very much for calling. Sorry about the odd time for the show tonight.
No,
but unfortunately, it could not be helped.
That's all right. I was bouncing around from Sammy's show, and then I had some stuff to do in between. Then I got behind, you know. So, yeah, I actually have some, after you're done here with this, I have some kind of a little bit of interesting spin to throw on top of it just to make it more confusing.
Okay. Well, since you go ahead, I'm going to make a comment to someone here in the chat. So go ahead and then I'll continue.
No, because this has to be after you.
It has to be after. Okay. Okay. Well, as I'm saying, Virginia could be very important in, as I said, the 2012 general election because there is a battle out there, as many of you are well aware of. Of the Stop 270. And there is one candidate who is, of course, you're not going to hear this on the mainstream media and not even for Fox News, who are supposed to be the conservative media, is that Virgil Goode is running, through my understanding, pretty well in Virginia. It is his home state. He is running for the Constitution Party. And if there are folks out there who are in Virginia or know someone who does live in Virginia, Virginia could hold the key of stopping Obama and Romney from getting the 270 to win. Now, if I take Virginia off the map and leave that to a third party, such as the Constitution Party, or should I say Virgil Goode, that leaves Obama 263, Romney 262. So for the folks out there who would like to stop the 270s, Virginia is the key. I think Virginia is the key. And I think if you know anyone in Virginia, that you should convey that and work towards that and do what you can to get the word out. So what's your thoughts on that, Chris? I will elaborate some more, but go ahead. If you're there.
Sorry, I was on mute.
No, that's okay.
I didn't want to make noise while you were talking.
Understood.
I have a mixed view on this, and the reason is because, and I'm trying hard today to find good information, and it's very hard because nobody's going to poll these third-party guys. So if they don't do an independent poll or somebody doesn't actually get out and do a fair and balanced polling, it's hard to get data. But I was on Johnson's site, and, you know, you look at you know, North Carolina, Virginia voted Republican 7 out of the last 8 races. 4 in Colorado voted Republican 6 out of the last 8 races. Nevada voted Republican 5 out of the last 8. All 5 of these are battleground states. Voted for Obama in 2008. And then you look at some of the numbers that I've seen, there, and they're a little bit old, so it's really hard to tell. And I really wish I had some accurate polling on Good and Johnson, but, you know, you look at numbers that I was pulling off his site, you know, 7% in Colorado and 9% in Arizona and 13% in New Mexico and maybe even higher, him and Judge Gray have been doing a 40-college sweep, 40 colleges around the country. You know,
right, I'm familiar with that.
And,
mm-hmm.
you know, and so, you know, what kind of dynamics does that have, you know, in this whole mix? You know, I think there's a lot of just, I don't know, without voter fraud, these two top dogs, you know, the top two, the top dogs could be in trouble. You know, I'm sure with voter fraud they won't be, but, you know, if you take, if you give, I like I said, I wish, I really wish I had the poll numbers. Where is Good at, you know, in Virginia? Where is, you know, in the Republican states? You know, Johnson has the ability to pull from both of them. I watched a clip of him today being interviewed in an environment, and they were talking about, you know, 4 key states, 2 of them he pulls from Obama and 2 he pulls from Romney. So it's really hard to analyze this stuff without good numbers. You know, it's a very speculative game. It'll be interesting to see, I guess, what is it, next Tuesday is D-Day?
Yes, it is.
Isn't that mind-boggling? But,
yes,
you know,
it
very
is.
Realistically, I mean, I haven't talked to Randy for a few days. He's probably been extremely busy with the election, but I'd really like to
right.
pin him down, somebody, and who's in the party, and get a hold of him and ask him, how's he doing in Virginia? Is there any stats?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because
well,
now what was the percentage you said in Virginia to Romney Obama? Because I looked at the old numbers, and typically Virginia
they're like 48. They're like 45, 45, 48, 48, something like that together.
Well, let me ask you this question. Because
okay.
if I look at the electoral vote, which is a site, and typically Virginia is 9-plus points, anywhere from 8 to 9 points. Actually, in Clinton era, it was 14 points.
mm-hmm.
So we have a state that runs 14 points 1 year, 8 points the next, 8 points the next, and 9 points
right, this is,
point the next.
And it's an average, and it's an average of all Virginia polls, and it's 48-48 Virginia.
Well, no, but what I'm saying is past. I'm coming to a point. I'm looking at Virginia right now, and I see the 2008, I see OT4, 2096, and 92. I have those statistics. And I'm saying Virginia, all up until Obama in OT8, was typically 8 to 9% higher Republican. So the fact that Romney's running neck and neck with Obama, I mean, isn't that just weird to you?
Mm-hmm.
How much has this guy spent, $250 million to be equal?
No, it's unbelievable. It's unbelievable how much these two folks spent.
This is the strategy of the great businessman of the world to be running, actually behind almost the whole campaign and primary, if I remember right.
Right.
So,
yep.
I don't know. You know, it'd be very interesting to see if you know what did you ever hear a number on what Good was pulling 7, 8, 9? What was his percent? Did you ever hear that?
You know, when I was talking to Good last week, when I seen him last Wednesday, he made mention that the polling numbers are good, but I don't recall him giving me an exact number. He was kind of reluctant to tell me, but he had a big smile on his face. I know that.
Well, I guess I should look right now. No, that's
yeah,
an old,
those,
old,
no,
old,
I understand
old.
Those numbers would be hard to feel. I understand how those numbers would be hard to find. You know, because, you know, there's just not going to be a lot of polling information, especially because of the, you know, the two parties and what they've already done so far to try to, you know, stop any kind of third party vote.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I got nothing to stop me for doing it.
Yeah. Wow. It is terrible. You know, because I was listening to that Johnson talk today. Actually, I listened to a couple different ones because I've been trying to get the one we missed last night, and I wanted to listen to it before the show. And I tripped over one that was pretty decent, but, you know, there was one I posted today after watching it on my group, and it was amazing because he says, if you hear Obama 100 times and Romney 100 times, how often do you hear Johnson for good?
Right.
Once. You know, he says, I'm polling 5% across the nation. Do you hear me 5 out of 100 times? Not.
No.
It is a suppression game.
Yeah.
You know, and it's
yes,
the same with Virgil Goode. You know, I heard of a guy in North Carolina that used to call on Sammy Show a lot and has written books and stuff like that, and he's been kind of out of the loop. He'd never heard of Virgil Goode. And I'm like, are you serious? You're a constitutionalist?
Wow.
You've written books on the Constitution. You don't even know who the Constitution Party is. I'm going, man, the message is so suppressed.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, look how hard they've gotten just to try to get on ballots. I mean, look what they've had to work on just to get. I mean, they spent so much time getting on the ballot, and money. Yeah, that they had to spend all that time and money getting on the ballots that they, you know, didn't have the time and the money to actually campaign. And if they did, if they got more exposure, I think a lot of more people would be saying, oh, my God, let's get rid of this duopoly. And, you know, we need to move on to these other parties.
Well, no doubt. You've seen the numbers I've shown from Gallup over, I don't know, what is it, a two-decade research where they've polled consistently. And you pull 48 to 58% of the people are in favor of a third party,
right?
You know,
but
happens? They get squashed. Mm-hmm. You know, they get pushed right off the edge of the cliff and minimized, like Dr. Paul. I mean, if I didn't experience this primary and the suppression of the blackout against Dr. Paul, I don't, and Gingrich
for that matter. That happened to Gingrich too.
Well, but he still had his face was out there.
Well,
I mean,
after he suspended his campaign.
Yeah, but he still had voice. I mean, the guy, people knew who Newt Gingrich was even running. Paul, I literally saw when he was polling second in a state where they would say, first is so-and-so, third place is so-and-so, and fourth place is so-and-so. That's what you call a real blackout. I mean, there was some stuff I've seen, but if I wouldn't have experienced that, Robert, I would have told you you're crazy or a conspiracist if you would have told me what we know now.
Mm-hmm.
That the suppression or the, you know, is that great. The conspiracy is that big that many people are in on it. And I mean, what is journalism? Journalism is let me present the information. Well, think about it. Let's say I'm a nonpartisan journalist and I'm reporting on the election. Wouldn't it be fair to report on all the people running and what their ballot access is and do a little snippet on each one of them? Of course, you're going to always focus on the top players because that's the nature of America. But wouldn't it just be, you would just think it would be just American, you know, to at least let people know what is occurring in the election process for the most powerful seat in the country, in the world? I mean, I would think. Am I naive?
No. I'd have to say no to that. It just, but you know, as I said, there's power and pressure brought to bear. We know that happens. Special interests. You know, I mean, look at all the things that Bain Capital, you know, owns. That, you know, it's like, wow, you've got this guy running for president. He can pretty much, you know, control a lot of the aspects of, like, voting, like counting the votes, for instance, the voting machines. Like in Ohio, his one of his sons owns the company that supplies the voting machines.
Five key states, not just Ohio. Five key swing states.
Unbelievable.
And they were all that investment was purchased after. It wasn't like years ago. It was in the strategic, you know, play of this election.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We live in mad times, my friend.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a lot more than I thought. I mean, you know, I was one of those rah-rah Republicans, but I tell you what, after this, you know, especially the primaries, I was flabbergasted, to be honest. I could not believe the amount of just corruption and chicanery that these guys were doing and what they've done just to get Romney coordinated to be the nominee. It's just unbelievable.
Well, here's one thing, I guess. It's one thing to know that as an election, you know, as a campaign, I'm going to do anything and everything I can to get elected. But it's another when the news does anything and everything they can to help you versus just report and let you run your campaign. You know what I mean? That's the part of it, the connection between those two entities is if Americans don't stop supporting these news agencies and learn to get their news, you know, real news, you know, via the internet and social media and wherever else, but get out of this because really when you think about Obama and Romney and the news behind them, it's almost like they're all the same people. You know what I mean? They all say and do whatever they have to do to get their guy elected. This is not – I mean, how long ago – I guess that would be an interesting little bit of research, but how long ago was the last time that the news actually reported on election fair and equal, fair and square? Here's the information you decide. I wonder when the last time that was.
Very good question. I've got no idea.
Ever?
I just got a chat here from Eric. Said he worked on Romney's legal team back in September. Some ballots were forged in Virginia. Voters registration for Virginia is so important. Well, Eric, if you could call in at five, not him, escape my phone number, that wouldn't have been good. Area code 347-945-7428. If you'd like to call in and chime in, Eric, that'd be fine with me. That'd be great. Go ahead and do it. Let's hear what experiences you got there.
Let's talk about Virginia. Newt didn't get on the dang ballot. It's his state. You know, they had rules. They had rules. Mm-hmm. I remember trying to research that. I worked hard to try to get to the bottom of it. I found a couple of articles, and the information was scrubbed. Nobody would talk about it. Nobody reported. I found some stuff, and then it disappeared. But essentially what happened was they had rules on how the signatures had to be done and taken. And then all of a sudden, right at the last minute, you know, Romney and his, you know, minions went out and got their signatures, Newt's getting his signatures, Romney turns his in, rules change, Newt turns his in, they challenge his signature based on the new rules, they throw tens of thousands of signatures into the garbage, and Newt's not on the ballot. Come on, people, doesn't this, if that happened to a Republican versus a Democrat, would you be up in arms? Or is it because it's a Republican and the crime existed inside of the Republican Party, it's okay?
Against another Republican.
I don't understand that. I don't understand that mindset. If it's wrong, it's wrong. You know, and I mean, both you and I and anybody who's done this, followed this primary, in depth, I have thousands of line items of articles and videos and information on things that occurred through the whole primary. You know, people love to post. It's so funny because you can go to a Republican site and you'll see all the articles and all the, oh, my God, these machines were doing this and these machines, somebody tried to vote for Romney and it did that. Then you go to the Democrat side and it's all the states where the machines were being frauded for Romney. it's insane. And I guess the only way you see that it's the way it is that if you step back and you don't take a side and you just observe, you know what I mean? Do the research equally.
Right, right. Well, yeah, because when you don't have the bias, you know, because I mean, I remember a day, this is when I was younger, I mean, you couldn't say anything bad about Republicans at all. I'd be like, oh, no, blah, blah, blah. You know, but I tell you what, it makes me wonder, thinking back, you know, how many of these things that people are trying to tell me about the Republicans that were actually true, that because of my, you know, my blinders being on, that I didn't see it, you know. My loyalty to the party, you know.
Yeah, I think Bush shook it, and watching what they did, the Tea Party, and then what happened in this primary, that
Well, after
that
they did what they did
it.
To the Tea Party, and then what they did in the primary, that's what really woke me up. It was just unbelievable. And it's really woke me up to the knowledge that the conservatives are not welcome in the Republican Party. The conservatives, if they're going to have any kind of influence within the Republican Party, or in politics, I should say, they need, in my opinion, get out of the Republican Party. I think that conservatives, you know, ought to find a different party, because they're not welcome. And if Romney does win the presidency, then it's going to be even harder for conservatives in the Republican Party.
Yeah. I'm sure there's many people behind the scenes, you know, whether it be Palin or Gingrich or whatever, are just going, this is the worst.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And are probably sitting back waiting for those post-election numbers to see what's occurred in the third parties. You know?
Well, yeah, I don't know if I could see Palin maybe possibly leaving the Republican Party, but I don't think I could ever see Newt Gingrich doing it.
No?
I'd be shocked. I would be shocked to see Newt Gingrich. Now, that would be a shock to a lot of other folks, too. If Newt Gingrich was to leave the Republican Party, and the only party I could see Newt Gingrich, I mean, correct me if you think I'm wrong on this, but, well, maybe correct me, but just the opinion, but, you know, I think if he was to join any party, I would think it'd be the Constitution Party if he was to join any of them.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I mean, that's one of the, but I can't see Newt Gingrich leaving the Republican Party. You would think he'd do it. Well, I mean, he is keeping his word. He did always say that, you know, I will support whoever wins. He should have said stole. It probably would have been more accurate, the nomination. So
I know you stole the car. I know you stole the car, but I need to get to Portland, so I'm going to ride with you.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of folks saying, oh, you know, this is what Newt says now. You got to follow Newt. I'm like, man, I don't have to follow anybody. You know, the only thing I got to follow is my conscience. It's when I wake up on November 7th, I know that when I colored that box in, I colored it for someone I actually believe in.
Yep. I think more and more people are going to do it. I think the unfortunate thing is that if we had good press coverage and real poll numbers, that a lot more people would do it. You know, that the information has been squashed. It'll be interesting. Like I say, that's the numbers I want to see, is I want to see the counts coming out of the polls. I mean, you got in Ron Paul.
That could be
11 states that will be counted. 11 states. So let's take a look at that. I mean, that's another dynamic.
Yeah, do you have this list of the states by any chance?
No, I don't. I'm really bad at information.
You have that list.
California. California, Iowa, Maine, Maryland, New Hampshire, Oregon, Rhode Island, Washington State, Washington, D.C., Wisconsin, Wyoming. Those are states that have said we will count the votes. There's a handful of other ones that are write-in states, but there's no guarantee the votes will be counted.
Right. I tell you what, it will be amazing to see. I would love to see one state, you know, just one state, and that might be all it takes. I mentioned Virginia earlier. One state. Now, of course, you know, if it was just one state like Maine, I don't know if that would make any difference. But if it was like Maine and Virginia, or as I said, it could just be one state, just Virginia, to make it where neither one of the candidates get 270, that would turn American politics on its ear. And rightly so, and it should. And I think it really needs to be shaken up.
Well, I think it. Yeah, you know, we were for a brokered convention because we wanted. You know, I remember the emotional content I had, and my thinking behind. Mm-hmm. You know, the logical and the emotional content I had coming into the primary. I kept saying to people, I don't give a crap what happens. I want to bust it open. I want the truth mm-hmm. out. I want people right. to see the crime. I want people to see the crap that's gone on in this primary. I want other people to see what I already know has happened because I was dumb enough one night back in early part of the year. You know, well, I went to bed, grabbed my laptop, shut everything down, and I researched primary fraud.
I hate to interrupt you, but there was a gentleman that you mentioned earlier tonight that I believe you said you would like to talk to, that we haven't talked to for a little bit. And I believe he is on the line.
Yosemite
and
Sam.
I believe he goes by Gunny in some instances. So, no, not Yosemite Sam. So I am opening up his mic. Thank you very much for calling in tonight. How are you?
I think my mic is dead. Can you hear me?
I can hear you now.
I can hear you.
Oh. Okay.
Good.
Well, I may not be lasting long. The red light on my mic here is out, so it probably indicates my battery is not long for this world. But good evening, gentlemen.
Understood.
Good evening, everyone.
Good evening. It's good to hear from you, Randy.
Well, thank you. Yeah, it's been pretty crazy, and you know I've said this before, and it's like almost every day I am feeling more and more and more this way. Is I will never be so glad as when this election is over and done with, and we can get on with, you know, building the party and doing you know the necessary things, because there's just so much garbage out there and people so willing to believe a lie, people so willing to compromise values that they say they hold dear and valuable, you know. I just it's and I'm sure I, you know, and the part that it saddens me the most, and I know you all have seen it and felt it, is, you know, the alienation of friends and family. You know, how many friends, how much family have I alienated with, you know, saying, look, I cannot, in good conscience, sacrifice my principles by voting for a traitor. And then, you know, you use that kind of word.
A long time, yeah.
You know, are off on the edge, you know. But I view these two major party candidates as nothing less than traitors because of their willingness to violate the Constitution.
Amen.
Yep, exactly, exactly. We've been saying that, you know, vote for principles over party, and we've gotten hammered by folks who used to be our friends. And I'm not going to go into grave detail on that, you know, but that has definitely happened. I've even had someone call me a Judas goat, and I mean, I'm not laughing it off. I mean, I know people's emotions are sincere, but
absolutely. Well, and see, you guys have a different take on this. I mean, you know, it's like, look, what do you guys expect from me? I'm a constitutionalist. I'm a Constitution Party national vice chairman. It is my, you know, duty to build this party. It's my job. It's my accepted responsibility. What else do you expect from me? Now, you guys got a little bit different perspective where, you know, you were pretty entrenched with the Republican Party going to the, you know, national convention and supporting a candidate. I mean, I haven't been that point. You know, and what's funny is people will try to, you know, hammer me. Well, you just didn't give the Republican Party a chance. I'm like, I thank and praise God that I got out of that rat race rather than wasting any of my time and effort whatsoever.
Well,
I wish I would have spent a lot more of this past year. It's probably been over a year. Doing what I was, you know, I spent a lot of time, a lot of effort, blood, sweat, and tears, you know, working towards something that I think it was rigged against my efforts. I was, you know, in the grassroots way, at least, working for, you know, Newt Gingrich. I wasn't of any official capacity as, you know, all grassroots. But, yeah, I felt like, you know, I was working against a rigged game, and, you know, it'd be nice to have my efforts go towards something else. than something that really, did it really matter? I mean, could it made a difference because the things were already pretty much in my opinion, put in place to be, well, the way they're turning out right now.
Absolutely. Well, you know, I honestly, you know, I predicted this. I mean, I'm not patting myself on the back. I'm not happy about it.
Right.
But, you know, in 2008, you know, when we saw what they did to Ron Paul back then and how they, you know, illegally kept the delegates from being able to vote and to have their votes count and weighed. And one of the well, she's running for state rep in Indiana, a constitutionalist there. And she's here because of exactly what you guys have dealt with this year. You know, she dealt with previously, and both of us have, you know, put our, you know, stories together and are like, look, you know, the Republican Party is only going to get better. They're going to be better prepared, or should I say worse, depending on how you want to term it. But, you know, they already experienced a grassroots movement against them in 2008. So guess what?
Yeah, absolutely.
And so guess what? They prepared. They knew what was coming. They did not go into that not knowing what was going to happen. And people look at that as like, holy cow, I'm surprised. I'm not. I saw it coming.
Wow.
Sal Alinsky has influenced both parties. I mean, Romney's, you know, dad was a Sal buddy. You know, they've learned these techniques from, you know, the best, the true communist. And if anybody doesn't think, I mean, people don't understand, but, you know, when you look at war tactics or you look at terrorism or you look at marketing or anything, I mean, they're applicable to either side. You know, I think that the wake-up call is that people hopefully realize that the Republican Party has no code, has no morals, doesn't give a crap about rules or laws, doesn't care about, oh, hell, they'll break a few bones to get there. They don't give a shit.
Right.
You know, and so when people finally see that, if they ever do, you know, that was my revelation, was this party is no better than the Democrats, and it's over.
I had heard what you guys were talking about just a little bit ago, you know, with some of the Newt Gingrich, some of the things that happened to his votes and stuff, or signatures. Well, here in Illinois, let's see, Romney had enough signatures. And I believe, actually, Ron Paul had enough signatures to be on the ballot in the primaries here in Illinois. But neither Gingrich nor Santorum had enough signatures to get on the ballot for the primary in Illinois. Now, what normally the way Illinois works, and it's similar through a lot of other states, is that if you file your signatures and nobody objects, you could file one signature. In fact, it happened to us here in Illinois in 2008 during the presidential elections. Third party and independent candidates have to file 25,000 signatures. That's the requirement. Okay? Well, there was one candidate that only filed one signature for president, his. And because nobody objected, he actually had his name printed on the ballot. So that gives you an idea of how things work here in Illinois. And in fact, our own presidential candidate, Chuck Baldwin, we did not deliver 25,000 signatures. Now, we delivered a few thousand, but we didn't come close to the 25,000. Nobody objected, so his name was on the ballot in 2008. Okay, so now another piece of history here is in 2010, the Republican Party spent nearly $250,000 to keep me off the ballot. And after two court battles, they were only able to do so by 65 signatures. We had the Supreme Court to go yet as a remedy, and we were confident we could have got those back, but the general election would have come and gone by the time we resolved the case at the Supreme Court. So we just stopped the court battle before we had a chance to completely win the case overall. But so they, and here's the reason. Now, when they file an objection, they, in these courtrooms, their statement is, we are the only reason we are here. Now, this is them speaking, the Republican Party and their attorneys, actually their general counsel, John Fogerty, said, the only reason we're here is just to make sure that voters have a legitimate candidate on the ballot, that they aren't cheating, okay, that they aren't forging signatures. So we're just here. We're not here to keep them off the ballot. We're just here to make sure the process is pure, okay? That's what they say. They're trying to make the process pure. So this year, neither Gingrich nor Santorum had enough signatures to be on the primary. However, they had a gentleman's agreement that nobody would object, so that everybody's name would appear on the ballot. Okay, now how pure does that sound like the Republican Party is interested in making the system? You know, it's you know, they just want to eliminate the competition from, you know, all of the rest of this stuff. But, let's have a little gentleman's agreement here. So, you know, I just want you to see how corrupt and vile the system is overall.
Well, let me add something to that. And this is a little known fact, but in one of those Midwestern states, I actually have the article somewhere, but Romney actually made an agreement to allow, because Santorum didn't get enough of his counties filled out, and because they wanted to make sure they bumped Gingrich out, Romney actually gave Santorum some of those counties. I mean, there's so much crap going on. You know what I mean?
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
Let me ask you a question before you lose your mic, Randy. How's Virginia? Got any numbers on Gute in Virginia?
I don't have anything current right now, but I'll give them a call tomorrow, maybe give a report tomorrow. How would that be?
Anything we can get our hands on, because it's very hard to get your hands.
One thing I've shown the folks, Brandy, is that if Virginia was to, let's say, you know, let's throw it out there, if Virginia was to go to Virgil Goode, that is all it would, because we're going through the numbers, you know, going through the polls.
Right.
And if, you know, if things went out the way this 270 to win looks like it could pan out, if Virgil would win Virginia, that one state would stop Obama and Romney both from getting the 270 to win. just one state of Virginia, and that's with Romney winning Ohio and Florida. That's with Romney winning Ohio and Florida. If Goode was to win Virginia, it would stop both Romney and Obama from getting 270.
You know, it would be awesome to see that whole process unfold in that particular direction. I mean, just imagine for that to actually happen. You know, as I recall my history, it's never been done before.
270,
yeah, not to my knowledge.
Yeah, it has. Yeah, it has.
Has it?
When was that?
I don't know. You're going to ask me to look something up again.
Yeah, we're going to ask.
I know it has.
The resident researcher.
I've read it. It happened once before.
I'm kind of thinking that you're
unprecedented then. Nothing in recent memory for me, at least.
Yeah.
No, we've talked about it on these shows. I just don't remember.
No, I'm talking about it actually happening in my recent memory. Chris.
Oh, no. It was in the past, but we've talked about it happening.
Yeah, it'd be phenomenal. I think it would be a wake up call to the folks, and I'm not talking about the Republicans, Democrats. I just mean the electorate to show third parties can win, even if they just were to get one state. Third parties can win, and I think once people make that realization and their fear of quote unquote wasting their vote on a third party is wiped away, then I think you will see a surge of you know, third party candidates winning in elections all across this country.
Yeah, I pretty much never lived my life as a pessimist, but I got to tell you, this past year, I have probably been more pessimistic than at any point in time in my life. And
it's pretty bad.
I'm not happy with that. Don't give me. I'm sad that I have that perspective, because I am almost always a glass half full kind of guy, and you know, just to see how things have unfolded, you know, it's just like, you know, I almost feel like, yeah, that's some kind of farcical fantasy kind of a hope to, you know, think that maybe people might actually wake up enough to realize it's time to start doing something. You know, I've watched them time after time, you know, that it seems like there's a stirring of movement. You know, how much did you hear people, you know, 9/11 woke America up? Well, look what happened. They just rolled over and went back to sleep. And so, you know, I'm a little more pessimistic than I want to be. But at the same time, you know, I wonder if, you know, seeing that electoral process take place and neither Romney nor Obama to take the 270, how much would Americans really start to engage? Would that be some kind of a wake-up call politically or not? I don't know.
Well, we've seen the Tea Party, and I think for a small while they were effective. Unfortunately, they were duped in some ways with some of the candidates, in which they put themselves out to be, you know, Tea Party, you know, conservatives and constitutionalists, and obviously they were not when push came to shove. You know, my favorite one to pick on is Nikki Haley, for instance.
Well, you know, but when you understand the system, you understand why. I think, you know, a good bulk or batch of them actually went in thinking that, hey, I am going to be the one to champion the cause of the Constitution. I will not bend. And when they got in there and got swallowed up by the system, you know, I don't think, you know, I think went in honestly thinking that, but when you get sucked in to that two-party system and the control upon you, then you can understand and realize how that you could get to that point.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. Is your mic going?
Am I here?
Yeah, is that your mic going?
Yeah, Randy, you're still here. We hear you. Break it up just a little
okay.
bit. But,
no, I
we,
tell you
we,
what,
started.
I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to shut my mic down. I'm going to replace the batteries if I got some, hopefully. If for some reason I don't, gentlemen, I just want to bid you all a good evening, and I'll catch you tomorrow. I'll do the research and see if I can find out the numbers there for Virginia to see how things are going. And just once again, you know, say, hey, really appreciate all that you're doing, and with the open-minded research that you guys are doing, it's awesome, and I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Randy. Really appreciate you coming on. It's good to hear from you, as always, and we look forward to hearing you tomorrow night. And hopefully, if you can get some batteries or what have you, you're, of course, you know, you're more than welcome to come back on.
All right. Thanks a lot, guys. We'll talk to you after.
All right, buddy.
All right. Talk to you later. Take care. And folks, you probably already know this, but if in case the folks who will listen to this on the archives later do not, that was Randy Shufflebean, who is the National Vice Chairman of the Constitution Party. So it's always an honor and a pleasure to have him come on to Bard's Logic Political Talk.
I got a question for you.
Go ahead.
All right. When was the last time a Republican president ever balanced a budget?
I believe it was Eisenhower or something like that. But both those years, that was back in.
Yeah, Eisenhower. Now, how many times do you hear the Republicans beating up on Obama and the Dems for not balancing a budget? Every day? Fox News, 24/7?
Well, if it's on Fox News, I don't really hear it because I don't listen to Fox News anymore.
Well, we've heard it. We've
watched it religiously, but right.
Well,
yeah, we've heard it.
We hear it.
Oh, yeah, gosh.
The Agenda 21, is that like the scare tactic of all to be used against us? Who started the EPA? Okay, the Agenda 21, the whole UN Agenda 21, environmental, blah, blah, blah. Who started Agenda 21 and its beginning form?
You're talking about the EPA, Richard Nixon?
Yeah, Nixon, a Republican.
Took us off the gold standard?
Nixon. Who funded Planned and got Planned Parenthood going?
Nixon.
All right. So that means we've had Nixon, Ford, Reagan, Bush, and Bush. Not one of them did anything to stop Planned Parenthood. And yet that's a major contention every year used to rile up the Republicans against the Democrats.
Right, to get the conservatives. And that's why part of, you know, what's, you know, the show's title tonight is Will Conservatism Through This Election Win Out? And I think it's, you know, whether you get the Democrat, obviously if you don't get the, you know, you get the Democrat and Obama or the Democrats to win, conservatism will not win out. But also on the flip side, as you've pointed out, Chris, that even if the Republicans win, I don't, you know, conservatism will not win out. And I think that, you know, that's why you have to start looking if you really want to advance conservatism in America. It's not to go and vote for the Republicans, but look at the other folks, especially if you have Constitution parties and if you have some libertarians you could also vote for, then I say, you know, go that route because you're definitely going to have more, you know, conservatism winning out, as the show's titled, if you go that way than if you go through the Republicans. It's, as I said, you just illustrated.
Yeah, it's pretty mind-boggling to me. You know,
I've been a staunch Republican supporter most of my life.
NDAA, who started that? Patriot Act, a Republican. You know, I guess that this has been. Remember when I was chatting with you earlier? I was like, oh my God, I don't even know what to talk about anymore, because it's such a violation of my belief structure. You know what I'm saying? Is that Randy?
I think I hear Randy.
Oh my gosh! I'm sorry.
You have some batteries?
I found some batteries, and I didn't realize my mic was up. But my goodness, you know, I just that revelation. You know, I mean, I feel it myself. You know, and I've been in this fight for a while longer. You know, I should be used to it by now. But
yeah. No, it's so shocking, and maybe I just do too much research. You know what I mean? And there's so much information available to us. We keep uncovering things, and then when I say something like, you know, who started Planned Parenthood? You know, and maybe you knew it, but you didn't really focus on it. But by the fact that I brought it up, and you focus on it, it's just one more offense. You know, one more straw on the camel's back.
Well, you know, let's face it.
If we didn't care, it wouldn't bother us.
Right, but take a look at, you know, have you ever considered the Republicans' very first president and the absolute numbers of sections of the Constitution that he violated? You know, I mean, that we're talking, that's the Republican, the way they had it, that's the way they started out, was violating the Constitution.
Yeah, 14th Amendment. 15th, right? No, which one was the one that they ratified at the end of a gun? 15th?
The 14th.
14th, right.
Which basically made every person now a citizen of the United States rather than of the state that they were born in.
Yeah. That was just one move to towards what we have today. Yeah, you know, I really want to – I've been doing a lot more reading on the Federalists, Anti-Federalists. And I think that my heroes are becoming the Anti-Federalists.
You don't know how many times I have said personally that, you know, after reading the Federalists and the Anti-Federalists, I've said this. I said, you know, I'm starting to come to the conclusion that the Anti-Federalists were the prophets of their day.
Yeah. Well, Patrick Henry, I mean, if it wasn't for him, we wouldn't have the Bill of Rights in there. They would have had a totalitarian government in the first 50 years of this country if it wasn't for him.
Well, anti-federalist.
There was almost a revolution back then. Did you remember that part of the history? Not to interrupt you, sorry.
No, go ahead. No, you're right. You know, what I was going to say is that, you know, I think it's federal. I can look on my thing, but it's Anti-Federalist number 7 or 8, I think it is, that says, look, if you ratify this Constitution, there will be a civil war. I mean, they predicted it right out of the gate.
That was kind of prophetic.
Yeah, and I think the only thing that...
Yeah, as you said.
Yeah, I think the only thing was is I think they expected it sooner.
Well, and that, and I wonder, you know, you'd have to, I'm still putting together that timeline document, and you look at the, you kind of look and you go, okay, well, there was stuff, other stuff going on. You know, there could have been wars, there could have been economic situations, you know, that prevented it, other dynamics. And, but I think the principle was set in motion, you know, and Rex talks about, was it Rex or was it Kelly? I can't remember. I got so many constitutional people around me. But I was talking about Patrick Henry gave his last speech. He gave his last speech, and he still warned against what the Constitution could do, and then he died.
You know, last night I wanted to ask Randy about
you?
This because, you know. Well, last night we were. I wanted to ask Randy about this last night. We were talking about Abraham Lincoln, you know, about the Civil War.
The dictator.
And we were, you know, I was wanting to get what, you know, what his thoughts were on that topic when it comes to, you know, the Constitution or federalism for that matter, and the real reason behind the Civil War. I mean, yeah, of course, there's slavery, but you know, it was much more than that.
Any bona fide historian that takes a look at what was going on during the war of aggressions among the several states, recognize that legitimately that for the most part they already believed that slavery was well on its way out, and the only thing was is that again it all revolved around money, taxation, and economy, you know, how the North was shafting the South and how the South says, you know what, we're out of here then. Fine. we can do without you. And so when you take a look at the truth behind what was happening and then, you know, and I equate this. Here's the thing. I equate what happened here in the United States with, you know, the fact that, you know, the Union – The federal government, the federales, you know, the excuse they said was to go in and free, you know, free the slaves, basically. And yet they, you know, perpetrated an unconstitutional war to do it. Well, you know, I look at that and I said, oh, my goodness, that's just right out of, you know, what did we do in Iraq? Okay. What was the real reason for going to war with Iraq? But yet, what's the reason to make everybody have this feel-good sensation? Well, we're going to free the Iraqis from this evil dictator. Guess
you
what?
Know, right, Randy,
the evil dictator that we put in there.
Yeah, well, not just that. We basically took away the natural enemy, the dog and bear enemy between Iraq and Iran. But let me tell you what I think it is. I think it's Saudi. I think it's to break that system down and ultimately go after Saudi.
Well, I don't know because it you know that's a strange dog there because you take a look at you know when
Saudis are the biggest funders of terrorism in this world.
Yeah, and guess what?
Look, a lot of the 9/11 folks were Saudis.
Yeah, but think about this for a second here, gentlemen. Bush said we are going to go after whoever harbored terrorists, right? So all of a sudden now we're going to
correct.
War with Iraq, and where are we basing all of our movements out of? Saudi Arabia?
Yeah.
Hello? And we're the ones who say we're going to go after those who actually perpetrated this crime against America, and yet we're using them as our base of operation to go after Iraqis who never had
you
anything with it?
History is going to look back on this time, and they're just going to be sickened with our stupidity in the Middle East.
Yeah, that's I guess sickened is a one good way to describe it. I mean I'm sickened to death in all of this, and you know that and which takes us right back around. You know we're going around the circle here again because. You know, we're talking about this political system. Do we have the ability to correct the direction that this country is going? And there are days I
say, very good question.
I don't know.
Yeah. Today I actually wrote a post. I wrote this thing about, you know, I was kind of going up cleaning up old sites and old stuff, and I go, you know, and this was an old post, and I reposted it, and at the top of it, it had "Liberty Once Lost is Lost Forever," John Adams. And then I said, let me help you understand all this. The RNC just shut down the people by nullifying the power of the state delegations. They burned the Republican process to the ground, and they want you and me to vote for Romney, the man who just became dictator of the RNC. Are you serious? A man who is willing to do that to his own party, what would he do once he's in power? And then that was just the post. It was an old post I had. And then somebody made a comment, and I said, you know, I said, I'm almost at a point where every once in a while I get this flash where going, and you'll hear me joke around and go, it's going to take a war. You know, I mean, maybe that's how bad it looks to me sometimes, that it's going to take something so catastrophic because people are not smart enough to understand what they're voting for, and they keep voting this in. And when I do, you know, I've heard the evils of the Democrats my whole life. I don't have to study socialism and communism and Obama. That's why I don't look at the news of the day. But I've been on this trek for a year of studying the Republican abuses of the Constitution, and that's what bothers me, because if both sides are doing it, it's accelerating. Look at the curve since the 70s, you know, inflation, the Fed, you know, debt ceilings, wars, constant wars that make no sense, our involvement in the Middle East and backing this bad guy and funding this group who later on then they became our, you know, they become a terrorist enemy. And you just keep looking, you keep adding this stuff up, and you look at that curve from the 70s on, what, you know, actually look at it when Nixon finished taking us off the gold standard. And you look at that spike in all aspects, whether it's war, economics, the breakdown of our culture, the breakdowns of morals in our society. And you look at all those factors and you think, one guy's not going to fix this. 538 guys can't even fix it. 535, sorry, the three extra electors. But, you know, can't fix this. I'm like going, what is it going to take? Is it going to take an act of God? Is it going to take, you know, Noah and the Ark kind of thing? I don't know, Randy. I mean, it's pretty dark some days.
Actually, I think, you know, that in a sense, you know, the Noah and the Ark thing is going to have to happen kind of stuff because, well, you know what? And it's interesting that you mentioned that, because there is a scripture that says, you know, in the last days it shall be as in the days of Noah. But you said, is it going to take a war? I don't think Americans as a whole has the intestinal fortitude to protect their own liberties. And, you know, I know that, you know, when our founding fathers went to war against Mother England, it was a pretty low percentage at that point in time as well. But
right.
I just don't know if, you know, because the rest of the world, you know, we've been able to anger. It's not like it's not like the southern states. Remember, in the Civil War, this England was going to come and help out the southern states. Okay, there's nobody in this world that wants to help the United States together anymore. Because
lost you, Randy.
Is it lost his mic in?
I'm still here. I'm just.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah,
every once in a while you have a dead spot.
Okay, well, it's just, like I said, normally I'm a glass half full kind of guy, but, you know, when I start to look at the you know, in fact, Chris, you laughed at one of my comments when I said, you know, that Paul Ryan was nothing more than window dressing, and if you lift up the skirt, all you're going to see is decay. Well, you know, the point is, you lift up the skirt on any point in this United States, and it's ugly.
Yeah, it is. City, you know, local, county. I just look at my city. I look at the corruption in my city. Mm-hmm. I look at my county. I look at my state. You know, I look at these handful of people that are just stomping all over our rights, and the average citizen is out there stuck in rush hour traffic, you know, listening to their music, coming home and watching American Idol. I mean, I am not a politically astute person, but I've always been aware of my country and the directions it's going, you know, from a principled standpoint. And I've watched this coming for a long time. I did not know we would be here at this point, and I didn't know it was going to be my party that was going to help lead us to this point.
Well,
that was a good way of putting it, Chris.
I could not dream or fathom that we would be here. And it wasn't until I got out of the Marine Corps that many things became a revelation to me that were hidden from me because of the nature of the beast. And, you know, to discover that my government, the government that, in a sense, I was going to lay down, that was going to possibly, you know, my life was going to be laid down for. Now, obviously, I had my own thinking about where I was going to be, why I was going to be laying my life down. But, you know, when I came back and saw the complete violation of my oath to support and defend the Constitution, I mean, this was a revelation that was hard-hitting and shocking to me. And this is why I frequently have said, you know, I'm not a politician. I'm just a pissed-off jarhead. And, you know, when people say, Randy, you need to be calm about this. Excuse me here for a second, but bullshit. I don't need to be freaking calm about a thing. People are trying to kill my country. People are trying to rob my children of the liberty that we've been guaranteed through our Constitution. And you want me to be freaking calm? I don't think so.
Well, and you think about, because you and I are almost, you know, really the same generation, basically, you think about the freedoms we had 20 years ago and how we thought about government in our lives. You know, we never had these conversations because it wasn't that way. I grew up in Oregon, Washington, and Alaska 30 years ago. I used to walk in the when I first moved to Alaska, I could walk in the grocery store with my 44 on my hip and nobody batted an eye.
And the thing is, we dream that we would be here. I mean, there's no way that any of, I mean, listen, I remember hearing some of this talk when I was a kid, and I remember in my teens thinking, not a fat freaking chance here in America.
Not America.
Right.
Americans wouldn't allow this to happen. Hell, we voted for it. We're getting ready to vote for it again. We're getting ready to hand another proven progressive the power to do what the hell he wants to do with all his international globalist banking buddies and the Fed and his Fed buddies. You know, we're getting ready to hand him the power to take us down, you know, the same path but a little different angle than Obama. There ain't no difference. You know, people don't understand.
You want me to be calm.
Yeah.
And you want me to be calm about this.
Mr. Yeah. Cap and trade, Mr. Gay rights, Mr. Copay abortion, Romney care mandate, people don't get it. Agenda 21, Obama couldn't get it shoved down our throats in this country. Mitt did it in Massachusetts. He was the grandfather of gay rights or gay marriage. He was the grandfather of cap and trade as a state. He was the grandfather of mandated insurance. Are people insane?
Well, and then what he tries to do is hide it behind, oh, well, you know, I'm the governor of Massachusetts. That's what the people want.
Yeah, Gary Johnson was the governor of New Mexico, and he vetoed 750 bills and almost 3,000 line items and said, sorry, I don't care what you want. It's not fiscally responsible. That's a 2-to-1 Democratic state, too. So what's Mitt's excuse? No, Mitt is a progressive, self-admitted.
Yep. Well, you know, NDAA, you know, somebody was having a discussion about it, you know, and I'm like, look, don't take my word for it. Click on this link and you will hear Mitt describe it for yourself. You don't have to believe me. In fact, don't believe me. Challenge me on everything I say. and see if what you don't come up with comes up the same way. Okay, so go out there and check it for yourself. Mitt Romney says, I believe that the president ought to have the authority. But he also, you know, and this was in the Republican primary debates, but I don't believe Obama would violate that. And I know I would not abuse this authority. Well, if you wouldn't abuse it, why, you know, vote for it or sign it off then? You know,
What about the War Power Act? Remember when he was asked that question, Randy? He said, "Oh yeah, I think the the Obama's already got the legal power to do this."
Yeah.
Excuse me? To run around and use our military for political aims across the world, you know, invade this country, back this dictator, back this group, kill the other group. Excuse me? Yeah, I'm sorry.
Hey, you know what?
I'm losing it.
You guys are really, you know, I was already depressed. I'm getting.
Oh, yeah, you got to stay positive.
Man, I was already depressed, guys. You're supposed to be helping me out here. No, you know. But,
well, here's
you got to be positive. Speak positive.
I'm positive that I'm depressed here.
Oh, well, wait a minute.
I'm positive. We're up that crack. But, you know, strategically looking forward, 2014 and 2016 is going to be vital. If Romney gets in, we have to do everything in our power for a third-party president win. We have to.
I think that statement's true regardless of who wins. I think it's absolutely crucial and true regardless. The only thing is,
I think the pattern will be a little different if the Republicans lose. I think that creates an atmosphere where the conservatives will gain back power in the RNC, and the end result will be a little bit different. But what I'm getting at, why I say Romney.
But remember, who controls the duopoly? Okay, yeah, you may have the semblance.
Satan?
Is
his name Satan?
A little bit better for a while. You know, it's okay for a little while, but, you know, did you really change anything?
No.
You know?
No. No, and I'm not saying it's going to make it better. I'm just saying the dynamics will be a little bit different. That's all I'm saying.
You know, when you come at it from the perspective that I have been at it for so long, it really is no different. And the problems, the only perspective that might be a little different is that the hard time that it will take to try to get these Republicans to realize you've taken it up the posterior region one more time.
it's not anything that eats its way in.
Seriously, you know?
God.
And I'm trying not to be
bold. Yeah, it might be a little graphic, but hey, you know. Sometimes it calls for that, right?
I'm really trying not to be vulgar here. It's just, you know, I don't know how to describe it any other way, because it's a rape. It's a violation. We're being, you know, I'm just going to stop.
Go ahead. Just go with the Randy. Go ahead.
My wife's in the background. She goes, "You better just stop, Randy."
No, I get the whole. I mean, you used enough words there. I totally get it. Well, and the thing is too. And here's the argument. And I don't, you know, I'm not good enough at calculating conspiracies to figure out. And especially with all the research I'm doing on the Fed, the China dollar situation around the world. You know, it depends on, you know, what kind of war gets launched in the Middle East. You know, there's so many dynamics. You know, so many different points that. You know, are we going to have a slight recovery out of the illusion that Romney's going to fix anything? because he doesn't have a damn plan for nothing.
Fools.
You know, are we going to get a little bump? Are we going to roll into a war? You know, is it going to be odd 14? Is it going to be 2016? Are we going to make it to 2016? You know, there's a lot of questions there.
I dude, and this is a part of my skepticism right now. I don't think we're going to make it out of 2013 without a total crash of our financial system. I mean, you know, you've already been, you know, teaching people about, you know, what's happening with
China.
Yeah.
Oh,
you know, it's already there, and it's just poised. And I think really the only thing that is sustaining it at this moment is the Federal Reserve. And as you know, that house of cards is going to come. It's going to come down, and it's going to come down hard.
Well, I have an article that I've had up that I haven't talked about tonight, but this guy, he is a brilliant constitutional attorney, doctor, you know, just sharp. Let me find him here. Hold on. Edward Verena.
Edwin? Are you talking Edwin?
Yeah.
Yeah.
E-I-E-I. I read one of his articles. I have one, The Monetary Banking Crisis.
You're absolutely right.
Inevitable in the near future. He's also got the book coming out about the militia, which I'm sure you would love, because you talk about it all the time. He has a new book coming out about that, where he's totally broken it down, you know, going through case history, letters, you know, intent, everything. But he's talking about – but I was reading an article, and he said – if the Muslim world wanted to crash us, you know how simple it would be? Everybody that's a Muslim in the world just gets up for every month in a row and buys the billion of them and buys an ounce of gold a month.
Huh.
Nobody thinks about crap like that.
Yeah.
Except guys like this. He said, you know how fragile? He's basically saying this is inevitable. And that's just one. He's not saying that's going to happen. You know, he's just saying that's all it takes. Is just one force of people, or i.e. the China dollar situation, because we got China and Japan, China and the United Emirates States, China and Russia, China and South Africa, China and Brazil, you know, all these different countries that are now have trade deals, monetary deals going on with China, where they're no longer using the U.S. dollar. So let's say that takes $2 trillion out of the market, and all of a sudden that money is no longer being used in the international market as a trade dollar, and that comes home, that paper money with no gold behind it.
Yep.
No fiat system has lasted as long as this one has. You know, we've run this one out, and the only reason that it's lasted as long as it has is because we're off the gold standard. Because even though we've had fiat systems in the past, they had metal behind them. You know what I mean? They had gold or silver or whatever. And so you always had that standard to hold you back. But when you look at those charts on Kelly Mordecai's site, when Nixon finally totally took us off the gold standard, and you look at those spikes on those six charts, if you look at those charts and that doesn't shock you to your soul, then you are numb and you're probably medicated. I mean, you've seen the trend lines, haven't you, Randy? Off his site. I mean, you look at the economy, the debt, you know, all these dynamics that are everything that holds a civilization together. Six charts, bam! You know, looks like a rocket taking off.
Yep. Well, and just in case you've sparked some interest for people. He has his website, Edwin Vieira. It's E-D-W-I-N, Edwin. Vieira is V-I-E-I-R-A.com. And, you know, you've got a lot, you know.
I just got a link I'm going to put in the chat, I believe, of something, newswithview.com/Vieira/Edwin2.htm.
He's scary brilliant on this stuff.
Right.
I've read a few of his articles, and you're like, oh, my God.
There's a movie that was out a long time ago called From Freedom to Fascism. And I can't remember the producer. He passed away. But a friend of mine was kind of tutelaged under him, and he's still doing some great things. A guy by the name of Gary Franchi. In fact, they created, Don't Tread on Me, Rise of the Republic.
Yeah.
I'm actually featured in that particular documentary.
Cool.
But, you know.
Were you screaming?
Yeah, I was talking fairly passionately. I wouldn't necessarily call it screaming, but, you know, it's the insanity of the position that we're in. And you know what? The words that when you guys were talking about the Republican Party, one of the words that came to my mind, and, you know, having to vote for Romney now, it's just another bailout.
Well, when he gets in office, I guarantee you that if he wins, all right, and it looks like all the powers that be want to make sure he wins, there will be a debt ceiling increase. I guarantee you.
And he'll be able to get it done. Why? Because, you know, like I heard Santorum say, give the excuses why he caved, because the administration had an agenda and it was their priority, and so I had to vote for it because the administration.
Take one for the team.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Well, and you got Boehner in there. Yeah. This is I knew this conversation was going to get deep. I have a new article I posted in chat. You guys are going to love it. It not only talks about Romney's early finance deals with the El Salvadorian death squad families, but it's also, it gets in more depth. It looks like somebody's tied some more things in there. Put that in chat.
Oh, wow. Okay, yeah. Well, I covered that a while ago. Yeah, I covered that a while ago on the show.
No, this is actually a new one with some more in it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so anyway.
Yeah,
folks
can find that in the archives, yeah.
Yeah, it was interesting. The other one was something that hit a great article in CNN. I'll put that in chat. Romney's other 47% problem. And it breaks down. It sounds like Ron Paul wrote this, because it talks about 47% of the world expenditures on military around the world is us. And I just had a gentleman, my niece's fiance, who's in the Navy, and we were talking about, Randy, I'm sure you've seen these, but all these new high-tech catamarans and trimarans that are they're made for shallow water. They're
right.
What's the word? It starts with an I or an L. There's a terminology for the type of vessels they are. Hell, they're $230 million a pop. 300-foot vessels. You know, and he was on one because he's security, and he was on one, and this thing is like, I don't know, 300 and some feet long, goes like 50 miles an hour, and it's designed so that you can patrol all the, you know, because most of our destroyers and things are all deep water, you know, they're blue water
right.
vessels. Well, you have that water as you get into shoreline, you know, right in between deep water and shoreline where a lot of combat occurs, and so there's this whole just billion-dollar, you know, experiment and all these designers coming up with all these crazy ships, and some of them look like spacecrafts, right? And all this money. And he said the one they were on wasn't even outfitted for anything. They just went from country to country to country, and then they held big parties on them so they could impress people, and they would spend, like, you know, on the deck, the flight deck, because you had a helicopter flight deck. And he's like going, you wouldn't believe it was just one big party from country to country to country on these boats to advance our relations with other countries. And I'm like, the frick has the military got to do with that? And why are we doing it on a $288 million vessel? And then I guess the question we did a whole bunch of research while he was here, and I'm like going, I never even hear about this crap, you know? And I guess the question rides back to the Ron Paul, you know, ideology, or the Constitution Party for that matter, is when the hell is it our responsibility to police the shorelines of the world?
Exactly.
We're broke.
Well, yeah.
You know?
Well, yeah. And you know, we are broke, but we're rich in a facade. You know, we're rich in fake. And at some point in time,
yeah, money.
that facade is going to come crashing down around our ears, and it's not going to be that far out from today.
Well, that is a very pessimistic look there, Randy. pessimistic today.
I guess I just need somebody to beat up.
You're bringing me down, and that's tough to do.
Maybe I just need somebody to beat up or something. I'd feel all better again.
Well, you look at this article that I'm looking at, all right?
Mm-hmm.
Romney says we need to spend more money and we need to be bigger and badder and have a bigger stick. And Obama's going, and it's true. If you look at the facts, he's had, a constant increase in military spending. Well, he's had two wars. We had a gentleman on, but 47% is roughly the U.S. share of global military spending. Our annual $700 billion-plus military budget exceeds the next 10 biggest military budgets combined. Much of that money buys forces needed to defend allies against threats they could afford to meet themselves. Alliances that once served the U.S. national interest have become subsidy to rich allies. That is corruption in the nth degree. Because
absolutely.
We don't need to be there. If we don't need to be there and they can do it themselves,
why in the hell are we putting our
great-great-great-great-grandchildren into slavery for so these people can – so we can do this? Why?
Look,
talking about it.
You're absolutely right. And, every time somebody said, let's give a date that we are going to withdraw our troops. And what do you hear?
Oh, well, if you give a date, you're going to be telling our enemies that they could just sit on the sidelines and wait for this particular date, and then they'll come back and blah, 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 blah.
A bunch of horse shit.
Oh, well, first of all, yes, it is a bunch of horse crap. I've got to tell you, the military never does anything without timelines, okay? Never do anything without a timeline. You put a timeline down to see if you have reached your mission. This idea of, well, we can't put out a timeline because it's going to forecast to the enemy when they can move and stuff. It's like horse crap, okay? But
It also tells your allies when they're supposed to be responsible.
Now, that's the point here. It's like, okay, look, Afghanistan. On January the 1st, you are going to become responsible for your security because we are no longer going to be here, all right? So now we're not going to die. We're not going to have our American men and women die doing things that you should be doing yourself and could be doing. It's not a matter. Look, we take a Marine and we train him in 12 weeks and he's ready to kick somebody's ass, okay? Oh, now the fact that we've been there for 10 years, however many years now, and we still haven't been able to train these idiots to kick somebody else's ass? Come on! There's something
come on. I mean, think about it, Randy. You're a military guy, okay? My son, he goes to boot camp. Within a year, he's in combat. It don't take 10 years.
Exactly. Defend it. Mm-hmm. Prepared to defend our country, and let me tell you, there's nobody that's going to kick his ass because he's well trained. Well, guess what? We have been able to provide this training for 10 years, and apparently they just aren't taking to it. So one of two things: either they don't have the incentive, or they're a bunch of freaking moron and idiots, and let's get out of there.
Or we're really not prepping them on purpose.
Interesting. Interesting.
If you were to come to my house and say, Randy, we're going to provide security for you until you learn how to provide security for yourself. Guess what? I'm never going to learn, buddy.
Mm-hmm. It's going to be cursory. It's going to be like, oh, yeah, what do you do in this situation? Yeah, that's pretty cool. Oh, wow. Well, come and give me one.
I've got no incentive to defend myself as long as you're willing to die. On my behalf, look, I don't have to have any of my family die.
And so spend your money.
Why should I belly up?
Yeah, it doesn't take 10 years. I mean, in 10 years, and you look at you, I mean, oh my God, this is so stupid when you think about it. Like I said, my kid goes to boot camp, MIT, goes to base, does his advanced training in Germany, and he's at war. He comes home a year and a half later. He goes back. He's a team leader. Or a year later, whatever.
In 6 years, you could have your degree in, you know, the art of war. You know, you could have and spent two years as a an intern, if you want to call it that. And guess what? You know, so what's the excuse for this out there? There is no as a reasonable man thinks, there's absolutely no excuse. It's just the fact that we've got a bunch of sheeple in America that are unwilling to think for themselves and be willing to listen to a lie to justify some of this most heinous of garbage. In fact, you know, there was a guy that I was trying to tell that, you know, we are in, I'm a Marine, and we are in unconstitutional wars. His statement to me was, we must support the mission or we're not supporting the troops. I'm like, listen, you know, I tried to tell him, but he would not hear it because it would be absolutely unthinkable that his son is in there willing to give his life for something that is not constitutional and not supposed to be done, because then it would be a possible waste of his son's life. I understand his need to, in his mind, justify,
validate,
you know, but the problem is it does nothing to free the fact that he shouldn't be there in the first place.
Hey, you're going to be proud of me. You know what I told my young in-law, future in-law, as he was taking off yesterday? I looked at him and I said, here's what I'm going to tell you before I go, because he got an earful of stuff while I was here.
I'm but, sure, Chris.
You know, he's been in the Navy for a year, and what he does is they're the guys that guard the aircraft. It's kind of a weird, they end up guarding a lot of Air Force on land. It's weird. I have no idea why Navy patrols are guarding Air Force. You know, who knows? But, I mean, sometimes you hear shit and you're like, what? But anyway, the word I was looking for was littoral. Is the word of these warfare ships. And that littoral region is the difference between deep water and, you know, and shoreline. And that's what all these new ships are being built for. But I looked him in the eye and I said, here's what you need to understand. I'm going to tell you what my friend Gunny, my 22-and-a-half-year Marine friend, has told me. You took an oath to protect the Constitution of the United States, not the man. That was the last thing I told him before he took off.
Amen, brother.
Proud,
I mean,
are you
seriously,
proud of me?
Yes, absolutely. You know, especially when I see young men and women in uniform, I'll come up to them and I'll ask them, what's your oath? Tell me what your oath is. And they'll quote it to me. Do you really, and I'll ask them, do you really understand that oath? Do you understand that it is to the Constitution, not to your family, not to these United States of America, not to the flag? It is an oath to the Constitution. And by God, you better find out what that Constitution says, because you have sworn an oath to uphold it. So I am challenging you to learn what the Constitution is. And I will literally, hopefully, typically I have a pocket Constitution on me, and I'll hand it to them. I said, here, read this and find out what your oath is all about.
Amen.
Yeah, I don't
I'm
know
put
how
the link.
What's
I'm
that?
Put the link in the chat. I'm going to put the link in the chat of these ships. Go ahead. Yeah, no, that's you rubbed off on me. So,
fortunately, that's a good one.
Yeah, it is important. It is vital. Well, Robert, what are you doing? Did you fall asleep on us?
No, I'm actually chatting with somebody who's trying to get signed in. I'm trying to help them out.
Oh, okay. Well, let me tell you a story of what happened last night that Robert and I were on, and a guy was in chat, and he was talking about, you know, Obama's cutting military and, you know, the typical fear factor crap. And I've done the research on the other end, and I know that during Obama administration, military's spending's increased, spy budgets have increased, and military sales, you know, arms sales have increased. So I already know that that's not a truth. Now, here's the thing. He was saying, well, yeah, but you know, and Robert said, hey, if you have an article, post it. Well, he posts an article, and it says, well, the Marines are cutting all these people. And I'm going, okay, well, let me ask you a question.
It was from January this year.
Then I go, at the end of the Second World War, did we increase military manpower, or did we decrease and let guys go? At the end of the Korean War, did we increase or did we let guys go? Same with Vietnam, same with everything. Did we not just end a war and bring tens of thousands of troops home? It is natural to decrease the size of your military after you've completed a war. Now, here's the thing. Romney gets in there. He's going to get us in another war, and we're going to increase again. So anybody who needs to get back in and get a job, they can go back in. You know, it's just amazing how they take those bits of information and use them as a scare tactic to make people think that something that is not, you know, something is different than it really is. You know, and I know when my son came back from Iraq the second tour, his first tour when he re-upped, they gave him all kinds of butt-kicking bonuses, right, and incentives to re-up because they were in the middle of it. You know what I mean? They needed his ass at the end of a gun. But when his second tour, when he came back and he was getting close to his, you know, finishing his 8 years, the incentives sucked because they didn't want him to stay in because they were cutting back because we were closing down Iraq and we're getting ready to close down Afghanistan. You can't have a huge standing armor feeding these guys to get drunk and do latrine duty. You know, you scale back and you increase. But they use that as this thing to scare the hell out of everybody that Obama's gutting our military. Well, he's doing what any other president does after a war is over. And I'm not, you know me, I'm not justifying Obama. You know, but it's the perceptions of things.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, one of the things that Romney is notorious for saying is that our Navy is at its weakest point since blah, blah, blah. Well, okay, we might not have as many ships as we maybe did, you know, right in the smack dab middle of World War II or something there. But guess what?
It's huge.
I guarantee you we could blow all of them out of the water with what few we have.
Yeah. Well, and Obama, would I argue on Obama's side, but he was correct. It's different today. We have different manpower. We have different technology. I mean, you take one battle, you take one aircraft carrier and a couple battleships, and you probably have as much power as half our Navy did in the Second World War.
Oh, you know, probably more so, actually.
Or more. Or one. How about a submarine?
You've got to figure one sub has the ability to launch several nukes. So I'd say one sub has more firepower than the entire Navy did back in World War II.
Yeah. See, and I don't mind. I guess the part where I've come at is when I came into this primary, I was already wary of Republican rhetoric. And so I stepped back and said, I'm going to analyze this as if I have no party loyalty, no emotional and, you know, no investment in either party, because I don't like what some of the things I've seen coming out of the Bush era. And so when I did my research, I wasn't being partisan. I would look at something and I would go, okay, they say this about Obama. All right, well, we raised the debt ceiling, and now they bitch about Obama spending money. And yet, who controlled the House? And I just started that process of, you know, 1 + 1 = 2.
Yep.
It ain't all Obama's fault. And until Republicans or conservatives or whatever that, you know, you want to talk about that voting base, gets their head out of the sand and quit making excuses for these crooks, we're never going to get the conservative voting bloc or power politically, whether it be Republican or third party, whatever. We're never going to get it back because we're too busy making excuses for people who are no different than their buddies across the aisle.
Exactly. Exactly, which is why we've got to get more parties with more aisles.
I agree. Mm-hmm. I'm all for it.
Yeah, and I would like to, chime in as well. You know, you got to wonder. I would think that this election and all the things that happened during this election cycle wouldn't have been enough to. And everyone's saying, "Oh my gosh, this is the most important election of our lifetime that, you know, seeing what's all going on, seeing where the Republican and the Democrat parties have gotten us this far, you would think they would be like, oh, you know, the folks would be, okay, well, it's time for a change. The electorate would be like, it's time for a change. And you would see more of a, you know, a move towards, you know, third parties. Now we've seen people saying, oh, yeah, well, you know, we want to see third parties, but what are they doing, you know, for it, you know, to work towards it? You know, of course, and a lot of folks, you know, we all know, is going to fall in line and vote for one of the other two of the duopoly, you know, in a week from tonight. Yeah,
it's fair.
Well, you know what's interesting is that I've been thinking about a lot of these different aspects of of the dynamics that is happening. You know, because you know the fact of the matter is that once this election is over, people go back hiding underneath their little rocks again. They get all feeling all squirmy and comfortable and all of that. And, you know, the folks that have said, well, just hold off. What, you know, I know it's horrible. I know Romney's not the best candidate out there, but we got to vote for Romney, you know, to give America. Look, what's going to happen? They'll say, I know you're right, Randy. I know we need a third party, but just wait till after the election. Well, guess what? I wait till after the election, and where are they? They have freaking, you know, gone AWOL. You know, they're gone. They're no longer here. So this whole crap about just wait. Okay, I'm supposed to wait for you to no longer be here, and then what am I left with?
Well, you saw the I don't know if you've been kind of gone for a few days. I haven't seen you around much, but I posted a chart from, I think, 1960 or 1969 forward, up until 2010 elections. And when you look at, you know, you see every 4 years is obviously Senate and House and President. And then you have your midterms. And midterms are typically only 37% of the voting population or the legal voting population.
Right.
I'm not saying registered voters. I don't have all those numbers. But, you know, who could be registered vote in a midterm. And
right.
It's probably one of the most important key strategic elections there is, because it's
absolutely
the one, like in 2010, it's the one that blocked Obama. It's the one that gave us back our governors and gave us back, you know, Republican states. And so looking forward, you know, there's so much money spent around the presidential election, and actually the guy who has the least amount of power to pass anything, because the president doesn't submit bills. I mean, you know, it's just insane how people get this presidential, you know, this figurehead position. That's why it just disgusts me when people have such a fear of Obama. One man does not have that much power.
Right.
Unless he has a full House and Senate, he can't do that much.
Right.
And we've had Republican House for 2 years.
Well,
so
here's
he
the way
should have been able to do anything.
Taking off of some of your statistics there, I've always gauged it, you know, in a very general way. There's about a 20% consistently, if you look throughout the history, there's about a consistent 20% difference between the presidential election and the interim election.
Pretty close.
Okay?
Yeah. Or a little, yeah, depends.
Yeah,
on the
generally.
Year.
I mean, sometimes it's a little higher, sometimes it's a little lower, but, you know, the mean value is somewhere around 20. But I describe it this way. You know, we know that when properly motivated, 20% of the electorate will come out and vote. Okay? So here's the thing. We go into the interim election thinking in this mode of, we know when properly motivated, 20% of the people will come out and vote, because they come out and vote for the president. So we've got to really tackle that 20% and say, look, I know it's an interim election. We need you out here voting. You demonstrated you'll vote. You know, let's get out here and vote. The other part of the electorate that we need to focus on is those folks who have absolutely lost hope, have absolutely lost interest in the political process, because
percent of the population.
Exactly.
Well, they're tired of all the BS, you know, the other two parties. But, you know, they're like, oh, I'm not going to vote. They're all the same. It doesn't matter who, you vote for. I hear that a lot, actually, even among some of the family.
Well, you know what's
you know?
Scary? You know what's scary is they're right.
Well, and here's another aspect that I don't know if you guys have thought about or not, but I've had to deal with this particular aspect, and it's a great question, okay? You know, we talk about we're going to take out, you know, especially the Constitution Party. We believe that we, you know, have the high standards of morals and conduct and constitutional understanding and all of that. And so somebody will come back and say, okay, Randy, let's just say you get your third party elected. What's going to keep the Constitution Party from becoming corrupt?
Mm-hmm.
And I said,
that's
a great question. And the answer always comes back to
competition.
Exactly.
Right.
Competition. That's mm-hmm. We've got. I'm not here to replace the Republican Party. I want more parties, multiple parties, where you can have the competition. Once you start getting the competition, you'll see the corruption start to fade of its own accord. You won't have to be out there, quote unquote, attacking corruption. Corruption will take care of itself when people start having a person that they can actually vote for, have the hope to participate, and have the hope that their good candidate can actually win. Then we'll see all of that start to change.
Well, you know what's real interesting, Randy, is your midterms are pretty consistent.
Well,
yeah.
They used to be a lot higher, though. Wow.
Just to let you gentlemen know that there's only about 3.5 minutes left of live show.
When we're done here, I'm bump over to Tex and Rex and give them hell.
Okay. Now, what time did they do it at 10 to midnight tonight, or I don't know exactly what time they did theirs. Okay.
Yeah, we got some overlap. I just posted that link. I guess I'll throw it in chat and just for fun so people can look at it. But if you look at, like, you know, in the 60s, we used to pull much, much, much higher percentage of our, you know, population would get up and vote.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so people feel it's important that there's hope, that they want to make a change. I mean, I think, you know, the elections that happened, where was it, in Afghanistan? You know, was it Afghanistan or was it Iraq? I forget. Where they had the purple ink, you know? Maybe
Iraq.
We should have purple
that
ink.
That was in Iraq.
Yeah, okay, Iraq. Well, you know, I forget what the percentage was, but it was high.
Mm-hmm.
High, significant number of people.
87% or something like that.
Yeah, astronomical compared to what it is. And I think it's because people wanted to see a change, and they had a belief that somehow it can be different. And when we can give our American people that kind of hope, we'll see the numbers start to increase.
Well, 1960 was the highest year on this chart, and it was 63% in the presidential, 47% in the midterm. Now we're running 37% and 56%, and that was odd 8, not 10. But we've been down as low as 49% in 1996 in the presidential. So there's a lethargy there, you know. And I've said this, you know, multiple times through this whole third party research game we've been on, is that I don't have to spend any time convincing anybody who's made a decision who they're voting for to vote for somebody else. I just got to go talk to all the people who aren't voting, and we change our country.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
I have said that many times when I was running for governor, when I was running for the Senate. I said, look, I'm not here to split the vote. Republicans, you can go ahead and keep your measly little 20%. Of the people who are, and guess what, Democrats, you can keep your measly little 20% too, because guess what, two combined are only 40%. I'm going after that 60% of Americans that you have guys have totally left behind.
And real quick, gentlemen, I'd like to. There's only a minute left, so I'd like to thank everyone who's come in and listened to the live show, either from Blog Talk Radio or the Bards Logic Political Talk website. Of course, the other venues that people listen to the show on. Also, want to thank everyone in chat for your participation, both the newcomers and the people who are loyal guests. And so if you like the show and you're new here, please feel free to follow the show just by clicking the little follow button under the show's icon. And also, while you're at the Bard's Logic Political Talk website, check out the link in which for only $50 a year you can sponsor an orphaned elephant whose parents were killed by poachers. And it's for a very great cause of the Sheldrick Wildlife Trust. So thanks again, all. Have a good night. Take care, and hope to see you again. Good night. And we go on to the recording session for a little bit. Go ahead, gentlemen.
No, I'm good, man.
Yeah, I think me and Chris are going to head on over to Rex and Tex for a few.
Yeah.
Okay, well, take care, and I will talk to you later.
All right, Robert. Bye, hey, God bless you, my friend.
Take care. See you again.
All right.
Okay.
And for the folks who are still listening to this, for the archives, I'm going to end the show, of course, the way I end every show, is by playing the song by Aubrey Ashburn, which you can find more of her music on aubreyashburn.com.